harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countrymen, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fight beside me. Guy who claims he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking. Down real life, I'm fighting and falling down deep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fight beside me. Yeah, walking on the fight beside me. Running down real life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you run down my country, you're walking down the fight inside of me. And that's the name of this program here on Light Resistance Radio. com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, my good friend down in Seattle, Washington, is Dr. James Sanchez, is always a first-rate source of information and cool analysis, and that's what I like. Here's something: a story about global warming. Yeah, you've heard a lot about that. Well, it's probably back in the news, and you may have read something along the lines of this story, but not with the clear, trenchant analysis. MIT activists, shameless mecca climate scare, Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. This came out on September the 1st. Alarmist climate activists at MIT, that's the Massachusetts Institute for Technology, have published a paper claiming global warming will soon make it dangerous for Muslims to make a pilgrimage to Mecca. Oh my God, really? The scientist activists make the claim even though millions of Muslims currently visit Mecca each year, despite an average daily high temperatures exceeding 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah, it's a pretty hot place. Okay, granted that. So what's the big fear? Global temperatures are at most rising at a pace of only approximately 2 degrees Fahrenheit per century. Not per year, per century. Moreover, global warming theory holds that the greatest amount of human-caused warming should occur during winter, at night, and closer to the poles. You know, we need more heat, presumably. So, assuming a 0.3 degree increase in average high temperatures during the next 20 years, that's 20 years, so a third of a degree, from 100.6 degrees Fahrenheit to 100.9 degrees Fahrenheit, Would this really make it much more dangerous for people to visit there? The common sense answer to this question is clearly no. It is extremely unlikely that the present safe current average temperature of 100.6 degrees Fahrenheit will suddenly become dangerous and alarming at 100.9, a third of a degree more. But that isn't really the point, as far as alarmist activists are concerned. The greater concern is that there are 1.8 billion Muslims in the world who might be frightened into supporting climate activism if they are misled into believing global warming threatens their ability to visit Mecca. So far, the media, as expected, is playing right along with such silly asserted fears. The UK Guardian, the UK Independent, Science Daily, and Grist have all published articles trumpeting the Mecca fear. The study is also being featured at the top of Google News searches for climate change. Fortunately, CFACT is also paying attention and reporting the truth. And this is a correction. But anyway, that's kind of the top of that news. Well, I was quite amazed to see this and pleasantly surprised. There was an opinion article in today's Globe and Mail by Ezra Levant. Now, you need a bit of explanation about Ezra. He's not my favorite person. He's a hustling, self-promoting Jew. But he is for free speech, and he has a consistent record on that. I mean, consistent going back when he was in law school in the early 1990s. So I give him that. He runs a thing called Rebel News Media, which is an online investigative media. And they do basically good work. They've done some good work exposing the immigration invasion of illegals into Canada, various abuses of free speech, various skullduggery around so-called climate change. So he's a brash sort of fellow. With a string of reporters who do basically good work. So, you know, okay, he's a Zionist, and I grant that. But he has also done a fair deal of good work and gotten under the skin big time of the left side of the political establishment, and even some members of the leadership of the Conservative Party will no longer have anything to do with him because, well, you know, he's too radical. Yeah, they're really brave, these people. Anyway, this is an interesting piece that he wrote about some of the persecution that the rebel has undergone. It becomes standard practice for the Liberal government to refuse to accredit me or other reporters from my company, Rebel News, at press conferences. Other right-leaning reporters are banned too. But at a recent press conference at Ottawa's National Arts Centre, during a visit by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, there I was, smiling at Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland from the front row. Chrystia Freeland is a piece of work. She's got to be the worst-dressed foreign minister in the world. But anyway, there are times when, you know, whether not particularly attractive thighs showing a dress a little bit too high, too low cut, a hemline a little too high. Anyway, we will leave the nasty observations aside. But she's a faux feminist, always ready to preach about human rights and freedoms and rights for women. She caused a major kerfuffle with Saudi Arabia earlier this year when she was preaching at them, denouncing the Saudi government for jailing two Saudi feminists. Some people would say, well, you know, really, that's Saudi business. Or if you're going to pursue some sort of a intervention, maybe it should be done quietly, behind closed doors. Anyway, they cut off a number of their trade relations with us at that time. But the interesting thing is, faux feminist Chrystia Freeland did nothing for fellow woman Monica Schaefer when Monica was held for 10 months in a West German jail. Yeah, Monica was picked up in January 2018, and she was eventually put on trial for criticizing the Hollywood version of World War II in a little video she'd done called "Sorry Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust." She ended up getting 10 months in a German jail. From the very moment of her arrest, we in the Canadian Association for Free Expression were lobbying Ottawa to do something. Get her out. She's a Canadian citizen. Go to bat for her. And we were urging that you know, if they made representations, very likely the German government would say, well, okay. See, it was a while before she was even charged. But would say, well, okay, we don't want her in the country, we just deport her back to Canada, which wouldn't have been great, but that would have been acceptable. She did nothing, in fact, worse than nothing. When Monica went on trial in May, word was sent down from the foreign ministry to the consulate in Munich, and the consulate told her brother Alfred this, that they were not to attend the trial. They were to do absolutely nothing for Monica. See, even consular attendance at the trial would send the German government a message. We care about this woman. Watch, go carefully. Yeah, and, you know, the usual diplomatic niceties might have resulted in a quick court settlement and she'd be on her way back to Canada. So, anyway, Chrystia Freeland's a phony on feminism and other human rights. But back to Ezra Levant's story. Ezra says he was at this press conference for U.S. Secretary Mike Pompeo. I had been smuggled into the room by the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Okay, that sounds more dramatic than it really was. The former director of the CIA is Mr. Pompeo himself, and he didn't really smuggle me in, but he did let me walk into the press conference as part of his own delegation, which included U.S. journalists. And I doubt he told Ms. Freeland about it. Oh, that's great. That's just as shocking as it really as if it really had been a CIA operation. The only way I was able to attend a press conference by my own government was with the assistance of a foreign government. It happened in the summer too, when Ms. Freeland co-hosted a media freedom a conference in London, England, along with her British counterpart Jeremy Hunt. There, Ms. Freeland gave a speech and invited journalists to a question and answer session. But her staff singled me out two of seven reporters who showed up and told them they would not be welcome. There just wasn't enough room for all seven. Come on. The Globe and Mail, CTV, CBC, Global TV, and Al Jazeera could come. They're all, well, center or left. But the two conservative reporters could not. Andrew Lawton, the former Toronto Sun columnist, who now writes for True North Canada, and Sheila Gunn-Reed, a reporter for my company, Rebel News. Mr. Lawton and Ms. Gunn-Reed had been accredited by the British government, which organized the conference, but both had crowdfunded their travel from Canada. It was literally a conference about media freedom, but not for journalists. With the wrong politics. Yet you can't make this stuff up. The other journalists waiting to talk with Ms. Freeland, including the Al Jazeera reporter, were stunned by her attempt to deplatform Mr. Lawton and Ms. Gunn-Reed. And to their credit, they refused to attend a press conference without them. You know, good for them. Sometimes they do hang together. Faced with a boycott, Ms. Freeland blinked and grudgingly allowed some media freedom at the Media Freedom Conference. Yeah, you know, the hypocrisy, you know, just makes your head spin. And Ms. Gunn-Reed got to ask her question. Why had Ms. Freeland asked the United Nations to ban Ms. Gunn-Reed from their conferences? Why had the Liberals refused to respond to her access to information requests? Ms. Freeland's answer was shocking. especially in juxtaposition to what she just said in her official speech. In her speech, she said, with the cameras rolling, some of the world watching, we all need to defend our independent press, even, and perhaps especially, when it criticizes us. Yeah, great, right words. But what's the practice? That's the script she read when she was on stage with celebrities such as Amal Clooney. But when it was just Canadian reporters, Ms. Freeland let the mask slip. She said, you are here asking me a question, and that's my choice and my decision, she said. In fact, her choice had been to exclude Ms. Gunn-Reed. But do press freedoms really require her permission? She had said, I do also think that it's important for governments, for countries, for multilateral organizations to be thoughtful about media organizations that are truly independent and truly impartial, she continued. Ms. Freeland didn't explain that accusation. She had no problem inviting Al Jazeera, which is the state broadcaster of Qatar, and not particularly impartial. Later that day, she privately welcomed the foreign minister of Pakistan to the conference, one of the most brutal censors in the world. Ms. Freeland did not object to censoring journalists. She justified it if it was thoughtful. She ended by accusing Rebel News of being white supremacists. She had a dementia period in the spring. She spoke at some United Nations gathering and said that the biggest security threats in the West were white supremacism and neo-Nazis. Neo-Nazis? What do we mean? What neo-Nazi party exists in, say, Canada or the United States? White supremacists? Or whatever they are. We are seriously menaced by the spying operations and the ongoing meddling operations of Communist China and their trade boycotts and other punishments of us. And she sees a security threat in terms of neo-Nazis. This is wacko stuff. But she accused Rebel Media of being white supremacists. So, yeah, that's right, with a Zionist Jew running the company. And Ezra Levant may have many faults. I doubt you could credibly call him a white supremacist. It's standard now, he says. Indeed, the Parliamentary Press Gallery, the Reporters Guild that controls access to many press conferences in Ottawa, has banned us without notice, explanation, or any appeal. China's state broadcaster, Xinhua, is a member of the Parliamentary Press Gallery, but we're banned. And there really is something. The mouthpiece of Communist China is a member of the Parliamentary Press Gallery. A gadfly populist Canadian outlet, Rebel News Media, is banned. Clearly, much of the Canadian, the Ottawa establishment just doesn't get free speech. Not everyone appreciates our view, but we clearly speak to many Canadians. Our reporters have been accredited by governments around the world, in places such as Sweden, the Netherlands, and India, and even in partly free countries such as Iraq and Morocco. Only Canada has banned us. I'm not surprised the Liberals don't like us. But we ask prickly questions, but that's part of our democratic system. If you need help understanding the problem, imagine if former Prime Minister Stephen Harper had banned Liberal journalists from his government events. Ms. Freeland's conduct is remarkable given her former career as a journalist. Liberals need to know how freedom of expression of the press works. It's a gift you have to give your opponents if you want it for yourself. So, well-written op-ed piece, and glad to bring it to your attention. Now, Monica Schaefer, I mentioned her a little bit earlier, and this is a a statement she put out recently, a kind of an update, on the theft of five books of hers when she came back to Canada in earlier this year. This is on the 24th of April. And she was waylaid by CBSA, that's the Canadian Border Services Agency, or more loosely, the Canada Customs, and ever on the alert for hate. The thought police seized five books in her luggage as possible suspects, and Monica picks up the story. The CBSA, that's the Canadian Border Services Agency, theft saga continues. It took 9 days for their letter to reach me on July 25th, 2019. And in that letter, they said I could submit evidence in writing regarding the admissibility of the material. And it had to be received by them within 14 days of the date of this letter. Now, that's a typical bureaucratic trick, leaving you so little time, you don't really have time to make a response. The background. The Canadian Border Services Agency stole five books from me at the Calgary Airport on April 24th of this year upon my return from New York City. My first article described what happened. I'm just filled in the background. My third letter to the Canadian Border Services Agency is as follows. This is my third letter to the CBSA regarding your seizure of my books. The level of absurdity has reached astronomical proportions. It leaves me speechless. Let me try to find words to describe the paradox. First, the deadline for a rebuttal is impossible to meet. Your letter sent by ordinary mail was dated July 16th of this year, and I received it in Jasper at the Jasper Post Office 9 days later, on the 25th of July. Keep in mind, it is the height of summer. Your letter stipulated that you must receive by mail my evidence and arguments within 14 days of the date of your letter, which would put the deadline at July 30th. If my letter took just as long to reach you as yours to reach me, it would already have been too late and would have allowed a negative amount of time for me, in your words, to submit evidence in writing regarding the admissibility of the material. Such evidence should include any arguments that you might choose to make with regard to it, artistic, literary, or other similar merit, for example, educational, scientific, of the material in question. The more serious matter is that the onus of proof is reversed. You say I should provide evidence that these books do not constitute hate propaganda. If something does not exist, it is a moot point to prove it does not exist. If it does exist, then the person alleging that it exists should prove that it exists. The onus must be on the accuser to prove their accusation. Your logic is false. And of course, it's the reversal of traditional Anglo-Saxon justice, where the accused is presumed. Let's think about this. It must be somewhere back there in the mists of time. That's right, innocent! Innocent until proven guilty. Monica goes on to say, I've not read the books. The next flaw in your case against me is that you have stolen the evidence. You have taken away my personal possessions, the books which you deemed offensive. How am I supposed to gather and submit evidence regarding the admissibility of the material when you've taken the allegedly offensive books away from me? I have not read the books. I do not have copies of these books in my possession. You seized them. Explain to me how I am to gather evidence about an object that you've stolen from me. Would these books not be the very source of evidence with which I'm supposed to prove that they are not something that you allege they are? I would like to underline the utter duplicity and outright criminality of your agency and the master that you serve. For an example of something truly hateful and offensive, which is not only available still to this day, but is also lauded in the mass media as a sensational idea, Time magazine, when this book was published in 1941. Theodor Kaufmann, a Jew, called for the complete genocide of the German people in his book Germany Must Perish. The term hate propaganda would be far too mild as a descriptor for this blueprint for genocide. Neither Kaufmann nor his descendants nor any of the beneficiaries of this hate propaganda have ever been taken to court or charged with any hate crime. Why not? By your actions, you are showing your utter contempt for civilized society. What an insult to our intelligence that you expect us to respect Canadian laws and regulations when the so-called authorities exhibit this type of behavior. You have already been judge and jury on the books, and you followed your theft of my books with this charade of justice. It's a joke. Just after dropping this letter in the mailbox on August 13th, I received another letter from the Traveler Compliance Unit on behalf of the CBSA at my post box in Jasper. I guess I was not quick enough with the gathering evidence, and their decision was made. The three books that they still have in their possession were deemed hate propaganda. I have 30 days from the date of the letter, August 7th, that's August 7th, to file an appeal to the court. Some excerpts from their letter. Now, so five books were seized, she got two back, and they're keeping three as hate propaganda. Now, I have defended a number of cases like this, so I'm quite familiar with this. These are some quotes and quotations from the letter. It's been determined that one book entitled The Commission, one book entitled The Great Impersonation, and one book entitled Mystery Babylon New World Unveiled, Volume 1, fall within the provisions of customs tariff and item 9899.00.00. Their importation into Canada, therefore, remains prohibited. The book entitled The Commission was reviewed in full and was found to contain descriptions alleging that an identifiable group is to blame for serious economic or social problems. Descriptions alleging that an identifiable group is inferior, and descriptions alleging that an identifiable group weakens or threatens society. What group would that be? Now, you see, under Canada's hate law, truth is a defense. Now, I have not read The Great Impersonator. I'm not sure who the identifiable group is. You know, you and I might take a guess, but okay. Had I been Monica, I would have at least, of course, she says she hasn't read the book. She doesn't have it. They don't even specify which is the identifiable group, or I should say privileged group. If you had said capitalists, there'd be no problem. If you'd said Americans, there'd be no problem. If you'd said Christians, there'd be no problem. It's the usual privileged groups. The book entitled The Great Impersonation was also reviewed in full and found to contain same as above with one addition. Blaming an identifiable group for serious economic or social problems. Descriptions alleging that an identifiable group is to blame for serious economic or social problems. Descriptions alleging that an identifiable group manipulates media, trade, politics, government to the detriment of society. You can pretty much, it is protecting the guilty from criticism. Because, depending on the specifics, truth would very much come into play here. The book entitled Mystery Babylon, New World Unveiled, Volume 1, was also reviewed in full and found to contain descriptions alleging that an identifiable group is to blame for serious economic or social problems, descriptions alleging that an identifiable group manipulates media, trade, politics, government to the detriment of society, descriptions alleging that an identifiable group is inferior, and descriptions alleging that an identifiable group weakens or threatens society. As a result, these materials have been determined to constitute hate propaganda under our current guidelines. Please note that the Supreme Court of Canada has ruled that the prohibition of hate propaganda is a justifiable infringement upon the rights of freedom of expression, guaranteed in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. The court stated the Parliament's objective of preventing the harm caused by hate propaganda is of sufficient importance to warrant overriding the constitutional freedom. And that's why, of course, Canada's Charter of Rights and Freedoms is simply bunk. The freedoms that you will read there that seem impressive for freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, freedom of belief, freedom of thought, freedom of religion, all these good things don't amount to a hill of yak doo-doo because they can be overridden for a good reason, says the court. So, Parliament has a good reason in mind. In other words, slavishly responsive to minority group pressure, they curtail these rights, well, then it's okay. And the letter to Monica continues, Section 1 of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms simultaneously gives us rights and limitations to those rights. Section 1, of course, this was the great con job. The Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms guarantees the rights and freedoms set out in its subject only to such reasonable limits prescribed by law as can be demonstrably justified in a free and democratic society. And beginning in 1983, when shortly after we got the charter, the courts have had a field day with this one. So what would reasonable limits be in a free and democratic society? Well, it's hard to imagine any reasonable limits in a free society. All right, what about a democratic society? Well, what the courts ruled, to make a long story short, is that if the parliament or a provincial legislature had a good goal in mind, whatever that might be, and in order to achieve that goal, it limited some of your guaranteed freedoms. Well, provided they didn't go too far, that'd be okay. So the freedom you thought you had, it just went up the chimney in smoke. Simple question. What if those descriptions alleging that, this is Monica, alleging that an identifiable group is to blame for serious economic or social problems, descriptions alleging that an identifiable group, and this is privileged groups, as I say, it wouldn't include Christians or white people or let's say capitalists, it's the usual privileged groups. What if they were true? Is that what they hate? Do they hate that we point out the truth? It seems to me that truth is hate to those who hate the truth. Really well said, Monica Schaefer. Further in her letter, one of the comments to her letter, she posted this online. One couldn't have formulated it better, writes one commentator. Such a remark would bring any decent human being to blush out of shame, and the average Japanese to commit seppuku. I believe the Japanese civil servants still have a sense of honor on par with their commitment to actually serve their own people and anyone happening to be on Japanese territory. But then again, Japan is a god, and any Japanese citizen is part of this god. Quite clearly not so in Canada. But then again, it looks as if civil servants prefer to be referred to as public officers, which explains a lot, even if both terms actually refer to the same obligation toward the people who are paying their wages. Clearly, Monica, you are dealing with cold snakes. Now for proper remarks. The info regarding this letter should have been made available as soon as possible. Why the delay? Still, I believe that this King Ubu case should be given maximum publicity around the world. Just to inform people about how despicable the Trudeau system has now become in terms of crawling submissiveness. For anyone with even an ounce of common sense, it defies imagination. Canadians are tops, let it be known. The Russians, the Chinese, and what's left of true Americans shall thoroughly enjoy this farce. Now, some of the comments seem a little disjointed, but I certainly agree with the thrust of the letter. And, when people hear of these matters, I know there's a tendency to throw up your hands and, be very unhappy about it, but sort of say, well, but what can we do? What can we do about it? Or there's nothing we can do about it. Well, that is not true. There is things we can do about it. One of the things we can do is simple. Tell people. Let people know what's being done to them. And let the world know. And never let people say, we live in a free country. Now, I think it's very important to tell people in most cases, nicely. You asked them, and Alfred Schaefer uses this approach. When somebody offers a platitude like that, do you believe that? Do you really believe that, or do you still believe that? Create some doubt, and then back it up with your references to things like this. You are not in a free society. For something innocuous, for instance, if you say, I love Bianca, I believe her name is Andreescu. She's she won the U.S. Open Tennis Championship. She beat Serena Williams. She's now seeded number 5 in the world. A year ago, she was, I think, number 258. She's a 19-year-old girl from my former city of Mississauga, just west of Toronto, a Romanian girl. She's done very well, and she's temporarily a national heroine, and rightly so. She's a tremendous accomplishment for a 19-year-old, and she certainly, in her public appearances, has shown real poise and modesty. She's not one of these media, celebrities who's absolutely full of themselves. She's a nice person. So yeah, you'd be perfectly free in Canada to say, yay for Bianca. You'd probably also be perfectly free to say, well, I feel really sorry for Serena Williams. I don't, incidentally, but something innocuous. Sure, if you don't have anything really controversial to say, sure, you've got freedom of speech. And I'm certain it's probably the same way in communist China. That's not the freedom that matters. The freedom that matters is the freedom to say things that are maybe unconventional or controversial or maybe even outrageous. Anyway, I have made quite a point of criticizing Silicon Valley censorship, and here's another example, and once again, who are the victims? Christians! So, if you're a Christian, you think you've got freedom, religious freedom, it's begun to creep out the back door. So more Silicon Valley censorship. Citizen Go Canada locked out of Twitter. Citizen Go is a Christian group. I received this memo just a bit earlier today. Dear Paul, I woke up this morning to quite a surprise. Our Citizen Go Canada Twitter account just got shut down. We are supposedly guilty of hateful content. what's hateful? Well, it's utterly subjective. Utterly subjective. Okay, if you're wondering what exactly we tweeted that was so hateful and evil, here it is. Helping LGBT people is not a crime. Don't ban conversion therapy, hashtag S260. That requires a bit of an explanation. S260 is Senate Bill 260, which will die on the order paper because Parliament has been prorogued pending the federal election on October 21st. And any legislation that had not been passed has to start all over again. But anyway, it very likely will come back. And Senate Bill 260 would make illegal conversion therapy in Canada. And that is therapy or intervention to try to get a person who imagines that they are transgendered to recognize their true sexuality. Or somebody who identifies as homosexual to return to heterosexuality. Now, it's controversial. I'm of an open mind about it. I don't think it should be made illegal. Anyway, back to the statement from Citizen Go. We don't know who made this absurd decision or what the reasoning might have been behind it. We were not given any opportunity to address the allegation beforehand. We only know that it happened in response to our petition opposing a proposed conversion therapy ban in Canada, which is Senate Bill S-260. And that's typical of the Silicon Valley censors. You don't get an appeal. You don't get an effective appeal. You don't get a trial. You're not even told what the accusation, what the substance of the accusation is. Apparently, helping LGBT people who want help is a crime, at least in Twitterland. I guess love is hate. How we could get shut down over some comments disagreeing with a proposed therapy ban is at best ridiculous. At worst, it is insidious political interference in the affairs of a sovereign nation, and that during an election period. Senate Bill S-260 is only a proposed bill. It's not the law of the land. In a normal democracy, we can discuss proposed bills and debate their merits. We can advocate for or against elements of those bills. This is particularly vital during an election, when the outcome of the said election will likely determine if the said bill will move forward or not. And that's quite true. If the Liberals get reelected, they are so beholden to the LGBTQ sexually weirded out lobby that this bill will almost certainly be resurrected. But Twitter's chosen to actually interfere in our Canadian democratic process and our Canadian election by locking our account over a comment on this bill. And this is what they were told. Hi, Citizen Go Canada. Your account has been locked out for violating Twitter rules, specifically for violating our rules against hateful conduct. You may not promote violence against, threaten, or harass other people on the basis of race, ethnicity, national origin, sexual orientation, gender, gender identity, religious affiliation, age, disability, or serious illness. And they cite the tweet, helping LGBT people is not a crime. Don't ban conversion therapy, hashtag S260. Now, in that tweet I just read, is there any promotion of violence against anybody? No. It's a political call not to ban something. It's about legislation. Is it threatening anybody? No. Is it harassing anybody? No. It's saying organize and write to the politicians and urge them not to pass this piece of legislation. Clearly, Twitter has decided that Bill S-260 must go forward into law, and the Liberal government that is pushing this bill must be re-elected. They are hell-bent to enshrine the newest political crime, that is the crime of helping homosexuals overcome their unwanted same-sex attractions, or helping transgendered people overcome their unwanted gender dysphoria, that is confusion. Just try it, or simply try saying you support the idea, and you will be branded a hater and a homophobe in Twitterland. You will be deplatformed and your voice will be silenced. That's what we've experienced. We are considering our next steps to address this political interference. Well, something I wrote to David Cook of the Citizen Go team, and I said to him, this is the gist of what I suggested, and that is, we've got to put out the call, and I've been doing this for the last 6 months, and others I know are picking it up, these virtual monopolies, these Silicon Valley monopolies, must be treated as utilities. If they either they should be broken up under the antitrust legislation that goes back 100 years or so, or, and probably better, they should be treated as public utilities, as essential public services. And your electrical company, for instance, is not allowed to say, well, we won't deliver electricity to you because you are a Christian, or you are a conservative, or you are a populist, or you're a flat earther, or whatever. They must serve you as long as you can pay. Now, some may say, yeah, but you don't pay for Twitter or Facebook. Well, yeah, you do. Your very presence there puts money in their pocket. They sell access, and you are basically the audience. You're basically the raw material they sell to advertisers. If there's nobody on Facebook, they couldn't sell any advertising. So you get this access, your Facebook or your Twitter account, or as the case might be, or YouTube, and they get access to you to sell to advertisers. They should be compelled to provide their service to anybody who is not actively involved in a crime. they are a platform. What you put on that platform, you're responsible for, and rightly so. So if you, on your, let's say in your Twitter account, libel somebody, you say somebody is a convicted pedophile, when that is not in fact the case, then you're responsible, not Twitter, you are. And see, what the government and the enemies of free speech are trying to do is to use the left-leaning nouveau riche owners of outfits like Twitter and Facebook, to use them to do the censorship for them. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. I'm going to take my musical break right now. I'd like to play some kind of uplifting music. This is really good folkish music. This is Ulster Scots tunes. You probably recognize a number of them. They were brought over by the Ulster Scots, who settled a good many parts of the New World, including much of Appalachia. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
Yeah. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to walk. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to talk. Give me an Ulster boy who beats his drum. For at least you know where he comes from. All over this world you could find a man to give you sweet loving as best he can. All over this world you could find a lad to love you through the good and the bad. There are sailor boys on the seven seas, lumberjacks up in their trees, film stars in their flashboard cars, and astronauts on their way to Mars. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to walk. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to talk. Give me an Ulster boy who beats his drum. For at least you know where he comes from. There are men over in Paris, France, who know all about sweet romance. They know how to wine and how to dine, how to make a woman feel oh so fine. The all-American boy with his big hat, with his big wallet and his big chat, he knows how to live a real good life. You could be his fine little wife. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to walk. Give me an Ulster boy who knows how to talk. Give me an Ulster boy who beats his drum. For at least you know where he comes from. There are men in India and Pakistan, men in China and Japan, men in Brazil and Peru. They know what to do, let me tell you. All over this world you could find
One evening for pleasure, I rambled a few fields all alone. Down by the banks of Carcaron, where beauty and pleasure were known. I spied a fair maid at her labors, which caused me to stay for a while.
Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. Shows repeated today in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the Maple Leaf Forever.
In days of yore from Britain's shore, would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever.